Hey guys, this episode was brought to you by Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/SGC64 for a free audiobook. You'll be helping out the show, and we appreciate you listening.
Super Gamecast 64, episode 84. Today on the show, guys, we're talking about all these games. We got games like Mass Effect Andromeda.
Why can't I hold all these games?
We got games like Thimbleweed Park. We got games like This is the Police. Got some Trolls and Me and Trolls and I and all this and much, much more on the other side of episode 84. Someone want to hit that DJJ?
No.
Hey, DJ.
JD.
JD? That was nice. A nice hit out to the DJ. Guys.
Was that backwards?
Yeah, it was. So, hope you enjoyed that, because Tyler just made that decision for us.
Fix and post.
So, oftentimes, I hear things like, Matt, you guys seem to jump from topic to topic way too often. And to that I say, I'm your host, Matt. With me, as always,
is Kevin. That was a weird intro.
I like that intro for me, Tyler.
I felt like this time we could really hone in and focus on the things that makes our show great. You know, very informed and factual information.
Have you listened to this show before?
Yeah, no, exactly. We're very informed. We're very factual. We know everything we're talking about without any sort of hiccup or mistake. With that, let's start on our... that's a good time to introduce Kella, the studio dog, who has found herself another bone, believe it or not.
There are five of them in this house.
She's a very spoiled doggo, and she loves her bones, but it's not good for audio time, so she's unfortunately got to take her bone taken away. But we love you still. Anyways, as I was saying...
Her sacrifice is for your benefit, so you better like this.
Yeah, a doggo...
A dog's purpose...
Is for this show to happen.
Yes.
So I guess we're a dog-friendly show.
Yes. Yeah.
We are a dog show.
We're Super Dog Guest 64. I told you this before.
Yeah.
Where have you been for like 6 weeks?
Far enough away. Okay. So, now that Tyler has come back around.
Sure.
Nintendo, specifically Reggie Fils-Aimé, who is the president, or is he the marketing? What is Reggie at Nintendo?
Actually, head of the president. King of Nintendo.
All right, I think he's the president of Nintendo of America.
The king regent of Nintendo.
But he's the king regent of Nintendo. So Reggie Fils-Aimé came out and said, hey guys, E3 is about to be lit for Nintendo. I mean, in more words than that. But he was essentially saying that there's going to be a presence at E3 from Nintendo. Which last year they just had all the Zelda stuff. Previous years they haven't had a main show.
What could they possibly have?
And that's what I want to lead into. Thank you so much,
Tyler,
for that.
The Nintendo Switch.
So, wait, no, hold on. Let me just preface the whole thing. Like
the
I said,
real one.
We are very factual. We're informed. We know things that other people may not know. Even big sites like IGN and Xbox Magazine.
Which that's because we can fit into those smaller spaces. They can't because they're too big.
So here are, just so you guys know, you saw the news. Reggie Fils-Aimé, he's like, look at all these things from Nintendo. We know these things from Nintendo. So, guys, let's break the silence. These are the big things that Nintendo will be 100% announcing at E3 2017 come July, June? I believe it's June. I'll start. Splatoon 3 releasing holiday.
Dude, you took it.
2017. Splatoon 2 DLC will be included as a pre-order pack-in. Nintendo
but only if you order from GameStop.
Yeah, only if you order from GameStop. Amazon actually like gets Splatoon closing. 1 remastered.
Oh, that's news.
Yeah.
We'll do that after this.
So you'll get Splatoon 1 remastered if you pre-order through Amazon.
If what are they gonna
pre-order through? Hold on. If you pre-order through GameStop, you get Splatoon 2 DLC. This is official from Nintendo. I totally didn't make it up, but you can mark my fucking words. When we do E3, you'll see any other news, any other things that we have
predictions.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
Not predictions. These are facts, dude. Don't tell them that they're predictions when they're most obviously facts given to us given to us from our insider mole at Nintendo.
What I'm saying. Is that based on the information that he fed me, I have a prediction. Because he was unable to uncover the truth. But I'm just saying, put on your tinfoil hat, folks. Let me try that again. Put on your tinfoil... Put some tinfoil on your head. Because what's coming out is the Nintendo Switch.
The, oh.
the real Nintendo Switch. What See, up to this point, mean? They've given you the Nintendo Switch. But what they're going to do is they're going to swap it out for a better one for all those people who didn't buy one when it first came out.
So it's like the Switch XL Lite?
Yep, and it comes with Joy-Cons that work. And
they're undetachable.
And when you bring this one to parties, people actually enjoy it.
Well, because you can actually connect it to your television because... without exploding the microwave.
Also, it actually comes pre-scratch, so you have no nothing to let you down when you put it in the dock.
In completely and then, unrelated news, I need a new microwave.
A week later, they send you a sleeve for the housing for your Nintendo Switch so it doesn't scratch the already scratched screen.
Well, but that's good because it's pre-scratched. It's like buying something used but new.
Exactly.
Tyler, you also have sources over there at Nintendo. As I heard in my year, Uncle Nintendo and fucking yes. Uncle Microsoft. My uncle is just Uncle Station.
Uncle Station.
Yeah, he plays with me sometimes.
Uncle Box.
Uncle Uncle Box and his ex brothers.
Well, no, actually, he's my former uncle because he and his wife got divorced. He's not blood related, so
he's your ex Uncle Box.
Yes,
the ex boys. The X-Boys are like the X-Men, but just younger, and they're not as good as the Playboys.
But what they lack in powers, they make up for in...
disappointment.
So you got, like, chill Kid and Toasty Boy, and...
These are if game systems were superheroes.
Holy shit. Let's, can we get back to the
let's
Nintendo
move, let's move back to the, so, the bit that is completely factual. Tyler, what is your insider information on Nintendo E3?
We will find out at E3 that there will be a sequel to Blaster Master Zero. It will be Blaster Master 1. And it will be the ultimate experience where you can play as Fred the Frog.
Can you play as the Blaster?
Well, I mean, you played as the Blaster in the first one. You played as the Master as well. Well, you just, like, jumped in and out of the game. Did you even play the game?
Yeah, I did. What's the gun that he holds?
The Blaster.
So you played the gun? No, yeah, you played like, the man.
Like in Rise and Shine.
He has a Blaster rifle, yeah. Yes.
I just want to play a game where I am the gun. But the gun is sentient and he feels like so the pain be, of taking
Then play Rise and Shine again.
Being used. Do you want to be used? And throw up everywhere? Because that's basically what guns are doing. You touch their, you know, the part in the hole, and
you know.
They throw up bullets everywhere.
I don't think throw up
that's
bullets.
That's basically how
people die.
That's, have you ever
All right.
shoot a gun
to
before?
Have you quote, ever shoot a gun?
To quote one of the most, the law that states how guns work, all right? And this is taken from none other than the highly legal and sound Grand Theft Auto 3 game. I believe they stated in that game, and this is admissible in court, guns don't kill people, death kills people. It's a medically known fact. Mm. You can die from cardiac arrest, small piece of metal ain't the problem, okay? Mm. With that being said,
sure.
Other
what if you shoot death?
Nintendo, the last Nintendo news, and this will probably come off as you guys will think it's a joke, but we'll see who's laughing. Mario, in a turn of fate and a effort to pull a more mature crowd, the Nintendo E3 conference will start off with Mario being brutally shot in the face by none other than Sonic, the new Nintendo mascot, in the new first-party exclusive mature-rated first-person shooter, Mario Must Die.
But here's the twist. Sonic doesn't have a hedgehog face anymore. It's actually a little more human, but the rest of him is totally normal.
So this is the year of Sonic, then?
It's the year of Luigi, again, believe it or not. And this is how they decide to
by making him Top Banana.
You know, speaking of
second... That's a DK joke.
Speaking of second-rate things that are constantly getting updated, but people still don't seem to care. Destiny 2.
You know...
That's just me being an asshole, because I know you guys love Destiny.
It's so cool to hate on Destiny. You're so original, Matt.
I want to give a hard break here. A hard break.
Uh-huh.
Everything before, completely factual. Everything now, speculative. Bungie may or may not have completely confirmed that Destiny 2 will maybe be releasing in September. But I'm going to let the two experts here take over, Kevin and Tyler, tell us this Destiny.
It is actually going to be called Destiny 2 as well. There's not like a...
I'm also going to write myself out of this bit because I don't know a word that rhymes with bit.
Okay. Destiny 2 is going to be dope.
Do we really have any hard information besides? I mean, I saw that they posted a picture.
A big there was a leak of a poster.
From an Italian magazine.
Yes.
Sweet.
That leak included a release date of September. I believe it was 16th. I could be wrong. Don't fact check me. I don't care. It's in September.
The original launched in September, I believe, right?
Does 916 mean anything to anybody?
That being said, the poster depicts The Last City, which, as you may or may not know, is the exact same thing that's in the Destiny 1 picture, the big floating orb.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that's what it was called.
It was the place. Well, I'm sorry, that is the Guardian, but they're showing the
Guardian is the planet thing.
Yes,
the city that is on fire. Right,
so it's all going down.
Pretty much, Destiny is it's now time to face your fate and your destiny in Destiny 2.
That being said, there was a recent patch to Destiny that was kind of, as Matt put it, their farewell patch. Where they brought back old raids, so you can play like Vault of Glass, and they updated it to be more challenging for people.
Wait, you can't play Vault of Glass anymore?
No, you still can. You can now. It's just it would be baby mode.
Oh, because it's only spec'd to like whatever.
Yes,
right. Whatever
light level. Or 20. So they actually bumped the light level up, and now you can run the old raids at that light level. So it's
like a hard mode for old raids you've already done that are properly balanced. That's
so
nice.
For people, because
heroic mode.
And that's why I think shitting on Destiny is really kind of not cool, because this is a perfect example of what? What are you looking at me like that for?
you know they're shutting down Destiny when Destiny 2 launches.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no, I get that. But what I'm just saying is like it's a perfect example of devs actually taking people's suggestions, taking fan suggestions, player suggestions. I'm going to say suggestions one more time.
Suggestions.
And making it live, making it real, and then making the game better.
My biggest thing with Destiny was that it started off weak. You picked it up at
Taken King. Best point, yeah.
You picked up at Taken King when it was already way to go. And we've already talked about this at length in the show. Tyler, when did you pick it up at launch, or did you pick it up at Taken King? Okay.
Picked it up at launch.
So then you can probably echo some of these feelings that early Destiny was very much do the main stuff and then repeat like the same four strikes.
It was very grindy.
Yeah.
I'll give you
and
that.
And I did a ton of that with you know, multiple groups of friends, and then I was like, nah. And then it took a while. I would say Taken King was really the first like good reason to get back into it. And that was how far away from release? It was like a year.
I feel like it was a year.
Yeah, so as a base thing, Destiny, the first Destiny, and it was ripe with all those problems, like, you know, shitty voice acting that they completely... Destiny had a rough start, and I agree with you, Kevin, that it's like the ugly duckling has hatched into a mediocre-looking duckling.
Now, I want to clarify. I'm not defending a game studio releasing a piece of shit and then polishing it. What I'm saying is for
Evolve.
late adopters like myself, it's a great game. And I think even for people like that aren't butthurt about buying it early and then like getting mad that it wasn't all that good.
They make a cream for that. It's called the Taken King.
Right. So just put some Preparation King on it. And no, really, like the game is fun. The game is fantastic. They did a really great job. I've logged a lot of time on it. I'm not even just defending the fact that I've logged a lot of time on it. You guys know how little I actually devote to games.
You're a fan of the game.
But I never started as a fan of the game. And I wouldn't say that I went into it as a fan. I went into it because Taken King was like $20.
I'm not saying that Destiny is a bad game. I'm saying that Destiny started off as a bad game.
I agree.
They have obviously worked on it. So I'm very excited to jump in Destiny 2. But I hope that the base game is worthwhile. Because Destiny... If you just take Vanilla Destiny, is not a $60 game.
No.
And that was the biggest issue.
Right.
If Destiny would have had the Taken King content, then it would have been an excellent game. I could have seen gone into it.
It'll just be interesting to see if the teams that have been working on late game Destiny are going to be working on Destiny 2, and if they'll translate that momentum that they have into Destiny 2.
I'm sure we're going to hear way more about Destiny 2 once E3 rolls around. Tyler, you have something to say?
Yes, I just want to clarify that it is exactly 361 days from the launch of Destiny that Taken King was released.
Yeah, so it took about a year.
One full year.
To get good, in my opinion. But we'll definitely see more about this from E3, or at least the surrounding weeks, because there's no way they're going to let this simmer at E3. Destiny 2 details will be coming, and we'll have it probably, like I said, at our E3 episode. But It's not the only news that kind of struck. There's been a whole lot of shit going on the internet. Some weird stuff. Right? A whole lot of shit going on the internet. And that's just fucking speaking in general.
I mean,
there's always stuff going on the internet, but lately, yeah, especially in our industry, you've been feeling a lot of, like, you know, those politics. Now, I don't really want to get into the politics of this next story, and I don't think neither do you guys.
It's just, as games journalists, it's important to recognize that this happened, I think.
So,
especially since it's a game that we talk about pretty regularly.
Let me briefly preface this. John Jafari, better known as John Tron. He runs
a YouTuber.
John Tron Show on YouTube.
He has a last name?
Yeah, Jafari. Oh. He ran the John Tron Show. He also, he created Normal Boots, which is the studio that handles, like, if you've ever heard of Peanut Butter Gamer, Did You Know Gaming, these kind of things. They're also on YouTube. But he's fairly successful. And over the past few weeks, he has made some less than savory comments in regards to current political
climate.
Yeah, climate and issues. He further digged himself a hole in a debate with a man named Destiny, a streamer.
Destiny 2?
Nope, not Destiny 2. We're talking something different. Which caused him to lose thousands of subscribers. Many people stopped watching him. These were sometimes blatantly racist, but very, very controversial subjects. He has now since come out and explained himself a little bit more. But once you make the comments, here comes your consequences. And one of those consequences...
You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, people.
Yeah. So Kevin, why don't you tell me, what has happened with John Jafari besides his YouTube loss of subscribers? One of the main things is what happened this past week. What happened to John Jafari and his work?
I think one of the more notable things, I suppose you could say, is that he was actually removed from voice acting in Yooka-Laylee, the upcoming kickstarted Banjo-Kazooie spiritual successor.
This is a game by Playtonic Games. It's published by Team 17. Well, we will be covering it, probably, yes, with extent. We've been covering it as a preview up until now.
Yeah, we've been following it pretty closely. So, I mean... In the context of this show, the reason we wanted to bring it up is because we've been following Yooka-Laylee so closely, it would be remiss of us not to mention this.
Yeah, so I don't think that John Jafari had a lot of voice in it. It was an early thing that happened back when the game was still kind of in its not infancy phases, but it was getting there. They had him on for some guest stuff. I think some other people in that circle, maybe some game grumps or something, might be in there. But yeah, they came out and they said, hey, John Tron, regardless of what he said and whether or not it's based in any sort of statistic or fact, the kind of things that he said does not echo us as a company, does not represent us as a company, and doesn't represent Yooka-Laylee as a game. So they're just going ahead and they're taking out all of his content, all of his connections to the entire work. And I saw a lot of shit, believe it or not, about people getting up in arms against Playtonic for removing him. And to that I say, they're a company and they don't have to... I'm not going to really bother talking about where I sit on the whole entire situation and whether I side with John or in the middle or with, like, Playtonic. But at the end of the day, Playtonic is a company that can say whether or not they want to have anybody on there for any reason, especially if John Tron just came out and made some slightly and sometimes overtly racist comments. They have every right to be like, yeah, you're not in our product anymore.
Yeah,
especially
absolutely.
When that's going to hurt sales.
If it doesn't align with their beliefs, then they have... It's their responsibility as a company, if it doesn't align with their beliefs, to add and remove people as they see fit. I think, like, reserving that right is a fairly important part of,
because otherwise you'll be a flippy floppy kind of wishy washy studio that doesn't
right.
have any balls.
Well, and people want to see conviction. So if this is the tack they're going to take, if this is the stance they're going to take, then cool.
And you got to think about this too. Yooka-Laylee is not an M rated game. This is a very much family game, and you might be saying, like, why does that matter? Well, if you look at a parent who is buying this game they see the bird and the bat and it's a cute, and they're thinking about buying this game, and then they also see, by proxy, that this John man has voice acting in it. The kind of shit he said has been enough to be on not just gaming sites. You know, he's a very popular internet personality.
Right.
Him having a connection does not necessarily mean that he's just going to be in the game. That might mean loss of sales. I mean, if you see thousands, almost tens of thousands of people unsubscribing from John Chan's YouTube and he's losing followers, that might mean a loss of some thousands of sales for them because of their affiliation. So I think good on them. I think, hell yeah, Playtonic, for sticking to your guns. Hopefully the game will be awesome. But I think we've talked enough about news for now.
Oh, I have two things.
Oh, you want to talk about some things? All right.
Speaking of Kickstarter games.
Okay, yeah, go.
So, we have an update for Bloodstained. We didn't touch on this last week, but we had the information last week.
Ooh, Bloodstained.
Bloodstained. The Igavania spiritual successor to Castlevania Bloodstained is... the Wii U port has been... I'm going to go with revoked.
Yep. Okay, see, I was waiting for you to say something like delayed, so then later we could say it's been canceled.
Oh, no.
But...
they just came right out and said it. They're stopping all port production for the Wii U, and they're moving directly for the Switch.
I can't...
full steam ahead.
I can't say that I didn't sort of see this coming.
Yeah. I think we actually predicted something like this on a previous episode, if I do recall correctly.
No.
Or maybe the sentiment was echoed, the fact that now the Switch is coming out and we still have things that say they're coming 2017, 2018 for the Wii U.
Yes.
There makes no sense that market is dead. Like,
The Switch was not meant to be a replacement for the Wii U, but it is.
Well, but it's very much just a Wii U, but better.
Sort of.
It's a different Wii U, but it does what the Wii U did for that game.
Yes.
You know, they don't need any... it makes more sense to go Switch because the Switch has a larger install base than the Wii U does at this point.
Mm-hmm.
If unless Reggie's speaking out of his ass, he said that they're smashing their Nintendo sales records. Not Wii sales records, but they're smashing Wii U every single day. They're turning out more and more. So why would you, if you had the option of making a port on a last-gen... now declining in manufacturing and declining in software development system, or the brand new system that is selling millions of units, yeah, of course you're not going to waste the money on the Wii U port.
Of course.
But
so, that being said, if you were a backer for Bloodstained, you can go back into your survey and change your preference. I was able to switch out my Vita port for a Switch port.
This game's coming out on, like, everything, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's coming out PC. You got besides Steam. Phones. You got besides
phones. I have a lot of faith in this game.
PS4. You got Vita. You got Xbox. You got the Switch. Now, I think that's really everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, coming out on everything.
I would say that there's like kind of three games that have this sort of caliber of like expectation for me. It was Mighty No. 9, and that's why I always come back and I tailor my expectations. Mighty No. 9, Ukulele, and Bloodstained, because they all come from very good devs, but they are all kickstarted games that, you know, they started off small and they've transformed. So I hold my expectations, but Bloodstained, it seems they're really putting time and care into
it. I agree. I'm really glad that you brought up Mighty, because it was just such...
Mighty seemed to shift. You could definitely tell towards the end of that.
Well, they're also letting Ego work very closely with the development.
He's just
which is...
his hands are in that pie.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean...
for those who don't know, that's...
made of the pie.
It's the guy who made Castlevania. Mm-hmm. He's working on this game. So it's good that he's doing that. Otherwise, it might just be kind of a ripoff. What's your other thing, Tyler?
The other thing is about GameStop and the poor Q4 last year and all the reports are in.
Yeah.
I'll
talk about this. Or you talk about this, but I'd like to talk about this.
They're closing 100 to 150 stores.
Yes, they are.
Nationwide. They have 7,400 stores.
Yep.
Worldwide, 4,400 of them are here. And these brick and mortar stores are closing.
So it's
150. I mean, it's a small percent.
It's a small percent, but what it shows is what GameStop has been consistently denying, that they're saying digital has no impact on them. Look, GameStop, like all sorts of stores, close and reopen and move location. This is not something new. So when people see 150 GameStop stores closing, they freak out. I'm sure maybe 25 of those were already planned. You have a weak fiscal quarter, you're going to lose quite a few.
It'll happen.
But working for GameStop for like 8 years, I've never seen... I don't work there anymore because fuck that place. I've never seen 150 close at once. Kevin, what's up?
I'm going to express what might be, in this table at least, considered an unpopular opinion.
Go for it.
I actually prefer physical games.
You're not alone on that. Okay. A lot of people do like physical games. But
only because I have no storage space on any of my devices and I have no intention to... expand them.
I prefer physical games, but with the business that we are in, us three specifically. Now, this does not necessarily, this isn't exactly what fans and listeners and the normal game player will go through. But a lot of times when it comes to getting games early or getting things from developers, it's all digital. They don't send you physical copies anymore.
Nope.
Right. The last person to want to send me a physical copy was EA for BioWare's fucking Mass Effect. I don't know why I almost called it BioShock. That was the first time I've heard them say, we want to send you a physical copy. Because digital just works. So my entire library, your entire library, Tyler, most of it's digital. But look, I do like the fact of having a disc.
It's the same argument between real books and Kindles. Like, I love my Kindle because I can take a library with me anywhere. In the same way that you just have to bring your Xbox somewhere and you have a literal, veritable library of games.
Yes.
As opposed to having to, you know, chuck all your discs into your backpack.
And it also comes down to the fact that discs now are way less than what they used to be because if you buy No Man's Sky as a disc, that disc gets you nothing unless you have internet. That disc gets you a broken game that doesn't have day one patch. So when you really look at discs as a standalone piece of media, they're pretty useless.
They're flawed.
Unless you're going, you have an online connection.
But at least you don't have to rewind them.
Yeah, true story. Please rewind. Did we have anything else on the...
Not really. I mean, I just wanted to point out that, like, Amazon is really taking over.
Well, I think the real turning point for GameStop, and this isn't a commentary on, like, whether or not I appreciate this, but when they really started leaning into the retail market as opposed to just games, they were looking at more, like, game accessories.
Phones.
Like, clothes.
Yeah.
Toys.
Yeah.
Things like that.
It became a specialty store instead of like a software store.
Yeah. So that's where you go to get game specialty items, not just video games.
And the funny thing about that, too, is that now when you look at things like, think of the normal gamer or the normal demo, I'm sure sitting at yourself at home, if you want to get a video game shirt, you're probably just going to wait for your loot crate. Or you're just going to go on Threadless or click that Facebook ad that has that cool Mario smoking a bong and a trippy, like, oh, that's a cool t-shirt. Like, no one really goes to GameStop to be like, I want to pick out some cool Mario clothes.
Right.
They're usually upwardly priced. And but that's the whole problem is that GameStop has been trying a lot of years to do a bunch of different things. I can tell you from personal experience that whole entire management and the way that they do all their business is completely flawed. They have no clue how the actual market works. They're oftentimes in denial. I have heard from sources that they are planning on sometimes restaffing entire stores because they weren't meeting their circle of life, quote-unquote circle of life numbers.
Mm-hmm.
They have now since ended that. It was basically like, hey, you have to get this many reserves and this many units per transaction. They were holding them to hard standards.
Right.
Wow.
So the problem is that GameStop is losing money, and then they're pushing it on their employees like, this is your fault for not selling things. And it's like, no, it's GameStop's fault for not, you know, growing with the industry and having a two-year-old business plan.
Offering complete bullshit incentives for pre-orders.
Hey, pre-order this game so you can get a poster. I know.
Like, at a time, pre-order bonuses were actually really cool. Like, there were some really interesting pre-order bonuses back in the day. But all
right. I'm going to, before we go into games, I'm going to take a two-minute aside real quick to explain why pre-orders were a thing and why they're not a thing anymore. When I pre-ordered Wind Waker, I got the collector's edition of Zelda, which has four Zelda games on it. It's got Zelda 1, Zelda 2, Ocarina of Time, and Majora's Mask. That was a pre-order bonus. You would also pre-order back in the day because it was all physical. Therefore, there were needs to have shipment allocations. You want to know if your store is getting 70 people buying this, 100 people buying this, 20 people buying this. Now the games are a multi-billion dollar industry. You're going to have 500 copies of Call of Duty whether or not you ask for it. Allocation isn't an issue, even with things like Nintendo products nowadays. The Switch is infinitely easier to get a hold of than the Wii was or even the Wii U. Try to buy a copy of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Super easy compared to like Zelda Ocarina of Time 3DS or even Majora 3DS. There isn't a supply or there isn't a demand that can't be supplied anymore. The incentives for pre-ordering are null. All that GameStop wants that reserve for is so they can mark somewhere on their sheet that they have a questionably, maybe confirmed $60 purchase, which in the end only gets them $5 of profit. They don't make more than like $7 or $8 of profit on a brand new game, but they're stuck up on this old system of must pre-order your games. It's fine. In 5 years, pre-orders won't be a thing anymore. I know I probably said that 5 years ago, but the more and more we see these day one problems and these... Think about it. In terms of going to a midnight release, you get your disc, you spend 4 hours downloading it, or you download it digitally and it downloads 5 hours before the game releases and it unlocks. It's kind of a convenience versus a, if you want the item, but go ahead, Kevin. I'm talking too much.
No, that's okay. I really like the atmosphere of midnight releases. I've always thought that was really fun. They've waned in the past. I mean, we went to like the Monster Hunter midnight release. That was pretty great.
That wasn't a midnight release. That was the morning of.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway.
They don't do that
for us. What was the one we all went to? It was for
Pokemon?
It was for Pokemon. That's what it was. That was fun. You know, it's like there's not a whole lot to it, but there's something nostalgic about it, I think. But it's going the way of the dodo.
Okay.
That is disco,
baby. I was going to go right into games, but one more thing, because people like this shit. I don't know why, but GameStop is like the video game place. You know, people always think, oh, work at GameStop, you just play video games all day, right? So people love hearing video GameStop or GameStop stories, right? Here's how pre-order, or this is why midnight releases have gone downhill. Before, they would give you a budget. Your district manager would give you a budget. Maybe it's 50 or 60 or 70 bucks, right? But over a course of a district, you're giving away a K, you know, maybe a grand to your whole entire district to do stuff for midnight, right? They used to give us money. So you could be like, oh, I'm going to order pizza. I'm going to get maybe this, or we'll give away something. Then they stopped giving us budgets and they started requiring them to get 70, 80 pre-orders. At least that's how it was in my district, in order to actually have a midnight release. And then at that point, you don't have a budget. So it came down to what the actual employees were willing to do. I had no budget. And no one was letting me, or no one was saying, hey, can you do this? But I personally put on a Mortal Kombat 9 tournament at the Mortal Kombat midnight release, bringing my own controllers and my own TV so my customers would enjoy it. This was something that was usually allocated. GameStop has gone far away from caring about the customer and giving them a good experience and bringing in the whole midnight atmosphere, like you so say, to trying to just kind of streamline everything. Now they're starting to give away games at 9 p.m.
Yeah, they have you come in and like pre-authorize your receipt. So you literally just walk in, they go, all right, here's your thing, pat you on the ass, and you're out the door.
Well, no, but now they're actually, some studios like I think Kingdom Hearts did it, and there's one other one, but they're literally, instead of releasing at 12, they release at 9 p.m. And that's a
reason. Depends on your audience, I guess, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's instead of getting it digitally at 12, you can go get it physically at 9 to actually, you know, make some room for that install time. But at the end of the day, it's just like, okay, now I don't feel like I'm doing anything. I don't feel like I'm going to anything. It's just like going to the store right before it closes and grabbing my game. There's no decorations. There's no nothing. It's fine. GameStop will be dead. It will be. They'll exist in some weird kind of online space. I'm sure you'll see a few stores. But it's not a company that can sustain itself forever. Let's move on. GameStop is fun to talk about, but you know what GameStop sells?
Games.
Giddy 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 games. But you know what else sells? Sponsorships.
Hey.
Let's do an ad roll real quick before we go and talk about all these games. Guys, stick around because we're going to be talking about Mass Effect Andromeda, This is the Police, Troll and I, Neurovoider, and so much more right after this ad break. Thank you, guys. I love this music.
I do, too.
It's really good. It's really good. Guys, this show and most of our shows are sponsored by Audible.com. Audible is the internet's leading provider in audiobooks. You can get all sorts of great, most popular, and most best-selling audiobooks, all the way down to the little independent ones, all read to you by professional voice actors, and sometimes even the author themselves or the actors that have played them in live adaptations. For example, the new Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them book is available for pre-order, and it's read by Eddie Redmayne, who plays the main character of Newt Scamander. And guess what? For all Super Gamecast 64 listeners, you can go to audibletrial.com/SGC64. Please do that on a desktop, laptop, not anything but your phone, essentially. And you can get a free audiobook. And you're not selected. You're not, like, limited in your selection either. So if you want, you can get that new Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them on day one.
You have full access to their catalog. You can get anything you want.
So besides Harry Potter and stuff, because I've been way into Harry Potter, guys. You guys want to throw me out some good audiobooks that you can get from Audible right now? If you go audibletrial.com/SGC64, you can get any of these audiobooks literally this second for free. Tyler, give me one.
Joe Hill's The Fireman.
Kevin, give me one.
I'll give you a couple if you want.
We'll go around the table. Just keep going.
Okay, yeah. No, I mean, Neil Gaiman's Norse Mythology. I recommended that last week
too. You know what? I'm gonna go pre-orders since I did that. The Fantastic Beast.
There you go.
Stephen King's The Dead Zone, read by James Franco.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Damn, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Bye-bye, Tolkien.
I got one. The Warded Man by Patrick V. Brett.
Ooh. Tyler, you got another one?
Is the Name of the Wind on there?
Yeah.
Name of the Wind, Patrick Rothfuss.
I don't think it's by the good narrator. I don't know which one it is. Rupert Dinga is pretty damn good.
I got one. For some reason, maybe you're listening to us and you're from a foreign country. You're probably not understanding what I'm saying right now if you don't speak English. But for those kind of listeners, you can get all of Harry Potter in German.
Cool.
It's not just English.
German.
It's not just English, guys. You can get tons of anything from nonfiction to drama to educational, self-help books, everything, and it's all perfectly read to you by professional voice actors and readers, storytellers, if you will. They weave a story for your ears. You can listen to these on your phone, on your laptop, anytime. Have books with you wherever you go.
That URL, again, is audibletrial.com/SGC64.
Now you're probably thinking, where's the string? Where's the string attached? Guys, for that free audiobook, there ain't a string attached. You go on there, you sign up for a month, they give you a month for free. 1 month of the subscription equals that free audiobook. If you don't like it, you just go ahead, you cancel it. But yeah, you have that audiobook, you listen to it, and it's absolutely free, doesn't cost you any money. If you enjoy the service, just let it go. And each month you'll get an audiobook for the low, low price of $16. But your first month is awesome and free.
Just as a point of fact, Tyler just looked up one of the books that we recommended.
Yep.
It retails for $31.49 on Audible.
And you get that for free.
And as a ongoing subscription, you get it for $16 a month.
Yep.
The Fireman, $46.19.
I used one of my audiobook credits on Stephen King's It, which is about 44 hours long, retails for $45 or maybe $50 if I think correct, and I got that for free using an Audible credit. And that's one of the greatest things about Audible is you can listen to old books, you can pre-order brand new books, and it all costs $16 per month. Or, I mean, you can buy them if you want. It's an Amazon company, so you can use them as a service. But like we said, for all Super Gamecast 64 listeners, you can get a free month and a free audiobook. Go to audibletrial.com/SGC64 on a desktop or laptop or some sort of tablet. Please don't use your phone. Doesn't help us. But get those good stories in your ears, guys. Thanks, Audible.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Gracias. Why are you doing that? Why did you just put real music
in? Get down.
He doesn't want to edit. That's
this funny. Week in Andromeda.
Good Christ,
guys! New game came out.
I'm not in Andromeda.
This week in Andromeda
is
a new segment we're starting, where every week, we'll tell you a brand new story from the galaxy neighboring our Milky Way. Our Snickers.
Dude, the way you say Milky Way makes me really uncomfortable.
Our Milky Way. For those who are not familiar with space and its deep and final vast frontiers. Vacuum and all of its finality of frontiers, there is a galaxy close to ours. Not close, but it's neighboring. It's called the Andromeda Galaxy. Okay. Hi, Callow, the studio dog. What's up, doggo? Hi.
Say hi.
Hiya.
Okay, that's...
Hi.
Nope, that's...
Oh, sorry, we're doing the podcast. Oh, Mass Effect Andromeda is a game. You might remember the what was it called? Oh, yeah, Mass Effect, the original trilogy made by BioWare. This is a fourth and it's not Mass Effect 4. It's just called Mass Effect Andromeda. It's a departure from the original trilogy. The original trilogy took place in the Milky Way. This is all about a big old ship of tens of thousands of humans... And they're trying to colonize Andromeda. They're going to a brand new galaxy trying to find a new home for them. So in Mass Effect Andromeda, fuck, this game. Guys, all right, let me tell you this week in Andromeda what happened to me. I was on the Nexus, which serves as the hub. It's kind of the Citadel. If you played original Mass Effect, it's your main place you go to. You talk to all your friends, and then you go off to the planets. So I was in the Nexus, you know, walking around, talking to all my different commanding officers, talking to all my friends and stuff, when I saw, believe it or not, a side quest. Now, side quests in Mass Effect Andromeda are super repetitive. Sometimes they're really good, but most part, they're fetch questy. So I saw this quest, and I was like, please, be a golden nugget, a great piece of tailored storytelling to bring me into this sci-fi expedition. Guess what the quest was, guys?
Find five chickens.
Go buy five fruits.
There was a party that was being planned for one of the officers. All right?
You needed to find candles for the cake.
Nope. Had to go to another planet for beer! Mass Effect Andromeda.
Beer run.
Once again, this game is a third-person shooter in which you explore giant planets and, you know, meet brand new species and really uncover the unknown. Yeah, it's a side quest where a beer run. Me, the Pathfinder who goes to unexplored planets. Guys, all I'm saying is a Mass Effect Andromeda does the opposite of what makes Mass Effect good. Okay, Mass Effect is good shooting and fun mechanics on top of a solid story. This week in Mass Effect Andromeda, which I played all week, I learned that Mass Effect Andromeda is a lot of repetitive and it's the same objective for a different reason that you don't care about 70% of the time. 30% of the time, you will care about the stuff going on. This is essentially my review of Mass Effect Andromeda. I did a whole entire text review. You can find it at a90skit.com. But for the most part, guys, Mass Effect Andromeda is a slightly disappointing, but sometimes entertaining continuation of the Mass Effect series. The biggest problem being that for a whole new galaxy, a whole new universe to explore. There's only two or three new races. A lot of the themes in the overarching storyline are rehashes of things you've already seen in Mass Effect. This was a great opportunity to blank slate it, kind of open up to a whole new world. Think Star Trek, you know, same cast, but completely different everything. Instead, it felt very much like a retread. If you're a fan of the series, guys, you should play it because it has good moments. But if you're not, you're probably going to want to skip it. Just to poll you guys, have either of you played any Mass Effects?
Oh, yeah. I've played a ton.
Tyler, have you played?
No.
Okay. Kevin, what's your favorite one? One, two, or three?
I'd have to say three, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, I like three a lot.
Okay, I feel like Andromeda is...
Two might have been better, though. I don't know. But...
Andromeda is more reflective of two.
Mm-hmm.
But it lacks a story like 3 does.
Yeah, that's what I... That's.
But in an even worse way. And then on top of it, the combat, which was fun, before you could do things like, you know, tell your partner, hey, throw a biotic move so then I can combo into this move and then finish it with this move. Now you can't tell your AI partners to do anything. They just do what they feel. So you have no control over them. And you can only use three abilities at once. It's kind of like a streamlined combat. What this feels like is it feels like, Tyler, you often bring this up, it feels like Mass Effect for fans and newcomers, as Final Fantasy XV put it. And I mean that as a joke. It's not a game for fans or newcomers. It's a game that both
for
will...
For babies.
A game for, that both will kind of dislike, but might find some enjoyment in. I gave it a 6.5, and I'm sticking by that. Disappointing. It's disappointing. There's maybe like 80 hours of content.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Honestly, that's what I feel. It's like when your dad sits you down and goes, look, you know what? I know you didn't mean to hit that boy in school today.
Just, you could have made better choices.
Yeah. I thought I raised you better. That's how I feel about BioWare. BioWare, I thought I believed
in you. You were supposed to knock his ass out.
Yeah, and you played yourself.
So and you played me, son.
This week in Andromeda. Oh, and then that ends. This week in Andromeda.
I don't know why you did that.
Oh boy.
Speaking.
Can I interject?
Yeah, go ahead.
I already did, so it doesn't matter if I ask.
No.
How many games have you beaten so far this year?
Ooh, I would have to check.
Just give me a ballpark.
24, 25.
Tyler?
4.
You know how many games I've beaten?
0.
None.
Kevin, how many games have you beaten, Kevin?
Not a one.
Kevin, when was the last time you beat a game, Kevin?
Actually, at the end of last year, I beat half Genie, half Hero.
Ah, the new Shantae game.
Yes, I beat that.
He beat a game.
I beat a game. That was the last game I beat. My prediction.
I beat 65 last year, I just want to say.
What are you going to try? What's your goal? What's your goal this year?
Oh.
69.
at least 69. Now that he said 69. That, I mean, I'll surpass it.
69.
69 now.
There you go.
Yeah? What about you?
Up it by 4. There you go. Let's see. Well, I'm already doing pretty good. If I make double digits, I had a good year.
So, Tyler, you think you're going to at least pass 10?
I would like to hit 10.
We are in March. We are a fourth of the way through.
Hi, I'm Tyler.
So
it's nice to meet you.
At this rate, you could potentially be almost 15.
Nope.
Summer. Don't forget those summer months.
Look, I've started so many games.
Well, you also play like super long games like Persona, so what are you going to do?
That is not true.
Persona 5 launches next week. Have fun, bud.
Yeah. I don't have a PS4 to play it on.
You have a PS3.
I'm not playing it on no stinking PS3.
Hey, I'm playing Breath of the Wild on Wii U, and I'm having
just... doing it wrong.
Kevin, it's fine. Do you have a prediction?
I do have a prediction. I'm going to beat one game.
You're going to beat only a singular game.
Actually, no. I might beat two. Actually,
if he beats more than two games, how much money do we take from him?
Money take from me? Why do you take money from me?
I bet $20 that you beat at least. No, because this is a fucking shit bet, because then he'll just not. Here's the thing. Okay, what are those two games you're going to beat?
What I'm saying is, like, if he beats the third game.
Yeah.
How about this? If I don't beat at least 10 games this year, end of year, I'll do something on the show. I'll do something, like, I don't know, embarrassing or
funny. If you don't beat 10 games, you got to tell that story about when you got punched in the face.
All right. Again?
No, he never told it.
Oh.
He never told it.
All right. If I don't beat at least 10 games by the end of the year, I'll tell a face punch story.
When you said that you're going to beat one or two games, it seemed like you knew those games.
I know the two games I'm going to beat.
One of them is Breath of the Wild. What's the other one?
The other one's going to be Starbound.
And here's the problem.
You can't beat Starbound.
Well, sure, no, but here's the whole problem is that is on the assumption that, A, you won't have a Switch by the year up, and B, that doesn't... E3 hasn't even happened yet. What if they come out of Nowheresville and there's a sweet, awesome 5-hour-long game that you're super amped for? Or we get a crazy good indie like we did last year, Manuel Samuel. It took 3 hours. See, last year you beat the shit out of Manuel Samuel. You can't say something like, I'm going to only beat 2 or 3 games in March. Mario Odyssey.
I'm not going to play Mario Odyssey.
Okay, but regardless, I'm sure there's going to be at least 3 or 4.
Okay, I can guarantee you there are going to be at least 2 more games that I'm almost positive I'll beat, and that's Yooka-Laylee and Bloodstained.
All I'm saying...
Beat the shit out of Bloodstained.
All I'm saying is that you're not beating enough. And speaking of actually things that beat too much, The Police!
Oh. Wow.
Topical.
Actually, it is, because This is The Police is a management sim where you play the chief of police, Jack Boyd, voiced by the man who voices Duke Nukem. John St. John.
That sounded familiar.
John St. John, yes. It's a game that is a mixture of Papers, Please, which is a PC game, and a management game. But basically, it's all about trying to remain moral while you have 180 days until your retirement, and you're trying to skim off the top, so to speak, $500,000 for your retirement fund. You do this by working with the mafia and different things. But yeah, it's a joke, but it's not a joke, because This is The Police is very much ripped from the headlines. It's very much questioning how
whether or not police brutality is a I mean, it doesn't ask things like, is police brutality a thing, or is it quantifiable, or is it... But it shows you how difficult it can be to run a police station, and it does it by throwing some pretty controversial things at you.
Do they whoop, whoop at you?
No, they don't whoop, whoop. It's things like... I don't want to really spoil anything. We'll get into a teeny bit here, because I'm pretty sure Tyler ran across it.
I would really like to, yeah.
There's 180 days in this game. You play 180 days of, you know, sending your cops out on calls, handling investigations, dealing with different people who want your help, et cetera, et cetera. I'm on day 156. Tyler played a teeny bit of it. Tyler, how many days have you played?
Two.
Okay, Tyler, tell me, what is the most atrocious and or offensive thing that has been asked or that you've seen in this game so far? Not atrocious, but I would say
cream and sugar.
It's not just send your police. There's obviously things going on in this game. They bring up political issues.
So like the mayor talking to the chief about his replacement, and he just wants him to go quietly, or he'll make a big deal about it, and you'll go down in flames.
Yeah,
that kind of deal.
Okay, so I wanted to ask this to Tyler because I'm not sure if it's on the second or the third day, but on one of the first days, the mayor. And this is where you get into this whole morale kind of thing. The mayor asks you, because of rising racial tensions, to fire every black member of your staff. That's a thing that happens in the game. And at first I was like, okay, that's fine. That's kind of weird. I mean, it's obviously trying to make a point. Until later, when there's a part where it's a bunch of LGBTQ protesters, and the mayor wants you to suppress them using force and tear gas and rubber bullets, even though they're peacefully protesting. And to cover my own ass, I spent $30,000 and manufactured false evidence on one of my long-running police officers to cover my own butt. So it's a lot of this morality kind of playing with what you think is good, but the biggest issue with This Is the Police is that it can be a little boring at times, but it's hard not to be a crooked cop. You cannot play This Is the Police as a good policeman. It forces you.
You cannot.
Because at a certain point, just anecdotally, in the beginning, they're like, hey, you want to work with the mafia? And I'm like, I'm playing this good. No.
Now what?
And they force you to.
What you just heard from Tyler
sounded
like a question. What he actually just said was, I'm going to play this game as a good guy.
Yeah, no. And that's one of the best things about This Is the Police is that you start that game very much thinking, I'm going to play this how I would play it if I was the chief of police.
Damn it.
And then you slowly realize that the game is almost, I mean, it is, it's rigged for you to be a crooked cop. There's times in which that's fine. There's times in which you'll lose a plethora of detectives or cops because people are trying to kill them all, and then you won't have the funds to hire new people because the city council will constantly be cutting your money. It's a whole bunch of stuff, but it's all packaged within a solid management sim that tries to tell some interesting stories. Albeit a little bit, I'm not gonna say offensive because they're handled with taste most of the time, but it's interesting to see a game. It's interesting to see a game do this. I know it came out, I think, last year, maybe 2015 on PC.
It's like lampooning.
I don't know if it's lampooning because some of it sometimes it feels a it does feel a little bit overboard. I don't know.
It's less kids playing the penis game and more. Op-ed on, like, growing racial tension in the U.S.
Yeah, there's games that try to make light of situations. There's games that try to kind of very much make a statement. This Is the Police does neither, and I think they should probably take a hard stance on it. But at the same time, it's just really trying to tell the detective story.
What you're trying to say is story they need to get rid of JonTron.
They need to get rid of JonTron. This is JonTron game. You play as JonTron.
This is Sting.
Game. No, it's actually...
And this is the police.
It's a pretty decent game. I'm quite enjoying it. I don't have a final score for it because I haven't finally reviewed it yet, but I will let you guys know. As of now, I'd say it's worth a try.
Maybe
not a buy, but it's worth a try.
It does have a 9 out of 10 on Steam.
It's a good game. Noting. It's a good game. It just might be sensitive for certain people. Guys.
Triggered.
There's sensitive creatures that live in our lands. Okay. They're very sensitive, very secretive creatures. It's not Cal the studio dog.
Yetis.
Close.
Bigfoot.
Even closer.
Tyler.
Sam Squamch.
Actually, that's pretty damn close.
Sam Squamch.
It's Trolls.
I was going to guess Bob Marley.
It's Trolls, and we're talking about the new game from Maximum Games called Troll and I.
Yeah.
Me and the Troll.
Troll and I. Tyler, I'm going to need you to
Kayla's pushing me.
To remain in your seat.
Quite literally.
Tyler's trying to evacuate his seat because Troll and I... All right, Kevin, let's talk.
I don't like this game.
Let's wrap.
Let's wrap on Troll and I. All right, so I play Troll and I co-op. Did you play it co-op?
No.
It's co-op?
Yeah, it is. I played a little bit co-op.
Oh, man. Now I feel like I can't really comment fully on it because I didn't play it co-op. I feel like it probably could have been a little better if it were co-op.
You'd think so. Troll and I is a game.
So, yes.
Troll and I is a game from Maximum Games. It's about a young boy who is kind of a
troll.
No, he's not a troll. What would you call him? Not a native. I don't know. He's like, he goes out in the wilderness. He's like a villager.
A dready tribesman.
He's like a libertarian.
He's like a villager.
No, he lives off the grid.
That's a good one. He's a villager.
And in your time, you meet a troll who lives in the woods.
Spoilers.
It's like the first level.
Well, I couldn't even get there, man.
You form a relationship. It's kind of like a Last Guardian sort of thing, but you do control. You actively control the troll. Huh? Last Garden.
And Popo Eo. Popo E. Yo.
Oh, you're saying that Troll and I is a combination of those two games.
Yeah,
I agree. Troll and I, it's, you would think it's better in co-op, but the problem is the frame rate.
Oh, God.
Is very bad. We're talking about 15 FPS.
There were times where it was really chugging.
It chugs even in single player, which is very bad that it chugs this hard in co-op. Also, for some reason, and this is hard to explain, but you have to visualize it. Imagine a screen that's cut
completely
in half. Imagine a screen cut in half. Your standard split screen stuff, right?
Yes.
Right, horizontal split screen. Ugh. Now, for some reason, the co-op in this, they divot it down. It's almost like it's very hard to explain. Yeah, it's like a horizontal cut, but for some reason the top part of the screen extends a little bit further down in the bottom right, and the bottom part of the screen extends up in the top left. I know that's hard to describe.
It's like yin yang. A square yin yang.
Yeah, it's like a square yin yang, but it doesn't make any sort of sense why they do that.
Why is it diagonal? Just to be edgy. Because Tyler?
Get it?
Because.
It's edgy.
And no, I mean, so the split screen is a little bit hard to discern. It's a little bit hard to discern what's going on at times, and that is not helped by the game's lack of conveyance. Now, before we start shitting on this game, I do want to say that a lot of the game is, I think you said it best, Tyler, or I think it was Kevin who said it. You said it's ambitious but flawed.
It's hugely ambitious.
Yes. I think the game has a lot of good ideas, but its execution is shite. Kevin, you care to extrapolate.
I think it is a good foundation. I think it is a good start for this studio to really launch into something that could be great. I think they took a shot at this, and they did a really good job with, all things considered. An indie studio producing a game of this caliber that looks like it's at least a close facsimile of a AAA
I wouldn't say Maximum Games is an indie studio. I'd say they're more of a mid-tier.
True.
This is a $30 or $40
game. $30
game. So we can't treat them like we're treating a 3 or 4 person team.
True.
Like a Neuroboy or something like that.
That being said...
Oh, boy.
That being said, it was very ambitious.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I feel they missed the mark a little bit. But this... They have some really interesting ideas that I kind of thought were just not very well fleshed out. That's all.
Tyler, I'm going to let you have your piece because I know what you're going to say. But I just want to say, and Tyler, or Kevin, I always do that. Kevin, you said this. You said that it reminds you of a PS1 game. Uh-huh. And I say that as well because the main problem with this game is that there's no minimap. There's no compass.
It reminds me specifically of a game, and I can't tell you exactly why, but it reminds me of Legacy of Kain.
I can see that. It's quasi open world, but it's not. It's linear. Mm-hmm. A lot of the space is just there to be space.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't really tell you I don't know if modern games have spoiled me or what they've done, but there's no waypoint. There's no anything pointing me towards where I'm supposed to go. And usually if a game has good level design, that can kind of circumvent the lack of a waypoint system. But a lot of, like I said, it's just open. It's kind of there to be big, not to be, purposeful. So you oftentimes spend your minutes going, where am I supposed to be going? What am I supposed to be doing exactly? Shout out to Cal, the studio dog. And a lot of that time is not well spent because it's not... Movement isn't exactly the greatest. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really cool things that could have happened with this game, but a lot of it, a healthy portion of it, is bogged down by its lack of technical ability. Like, it cannot sustain itself. The frame rate drops. There's this weird stutter. Anytime you see cinematics, reminds me of early Telltale. The ideas are good. It just feels like it was rushed or it lacks the polish. Tyler, go ahead, because I know you don't like this game. Tyler, you want to say your piece about Troll and I?
Just needs
to be play tested.
Needs to be tighter.
Yeah. And that's what I feel like. Yeah. Just
tighten the freaking bolts.
Right. Yeah, no, the controls are a little bit wonky. I think that's Tyler. Specifically had a problem with a
with the fire. Okay, like
there he goes.
It's a little bit to the right, and then a little bit to the left, but it's not really clear now, is it? And then you can't jump right here, and you can't jump right there.
So there's a part with the...
And then you just burn to death.
There's a part where you're running through the trees as they burn. This is like the first level. And it's a quick time event. You'll be running, and then trees will fall, and you have to press A to jump over it. But
you also have to hold forward.
Oh, yeah, you have to.
Because if you're not holding forward, you just die.
You don't run fast enough. They don't tell you this either. Do they?
Yeah,
they say hold forward.
Oh, okay.
To once. Go.
Not repeated use.
That's not what I'm saying. Like, I get that I have to hold forward to go forward.
Yeah, but you have to like constantly accelerate yourself, and also it feels like you're on rails. Regardless,
you can only turn so much while holding forward.
But here's the thing. The game feels like... Okay, so as gamers, we're set to expect certain things based on the context of the game at hand. So when you see a game at that quality, you assume one of two things. Either it's going to have really, like, hella invisible walls.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be super easy to cheese because you'll be able to just clip through everything.
Yeah.
It's neither of those. It has this weirdly difficult, like, just a tilt to it. I don't know what it is. There's a part immediately after the falling trees thing where you're sliding down a rock hill.
Yeah, and that part's a pain in the ass.
And... At the very last rock that you have to dodge right and then immediately left.
Yeah.
But you have to hit that gap so perfectly.
Yeah.
Or your kid will just slap his face up against
that
rock.
It's kind of like the Tomb Raider reboot sequences. Like, if you played that where she's falling down the waterfall and you have to dodge the spikes or else she dies. It's like that way harder. And it shouldn't have to be.
Especially. Weirdly hard. Weirdly hard. And my other big gripe with this, and it's the last thing I'm going to say because it's the farthest I got... there's a certain part where you come up against, like, a rock fall, essentially.
Yeah.
And they tried to do some clever game design where you see a gem that is the same color as the rock fall.
Yeah.
And his inner dialogue says something along the lines of, like, oh, that's explosive. I should tie it to a spear and blow up this rock fall so that the troll can get through.
Yeah.
So I did exactly that. I used a finite resource to craft two spears that explode.
Yeah.
I threw them both at this rock pile, and nothing happened.
Yep, you have to use it. You have to go on. There's something. You'll find the troll later. Really, you'll find the troll in that section, and then... There's a whole thing that, generally speaking, the game never tells you what you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
And it's not, doesn't control well enough to explore. All right, we haven't played enough this game to give it a final score. I don't think it'll perform very well. As for now, I'm saying probably skip it. If you're interested in it, you rent. But know that as a co-op adventure, it's just the technical performance does not hold up long enough to warrant a fun time with a friend, which is the biggest problem because I was excited for the co-op. There isn't enough couch co-op split-screen adventures.
The caveat I would like to add is that these are things that could probably be fixed by a well-placed patch.
Yeah.
So I think if they as a company, you know, look at this criticism that they're receiving and do something about it, I think it could be a pretty serviceable game.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good ideas. It's just the execution and the technical parts of it fail. Tyler, I know you're upset. I know you're angry at the world, so let me throw a little bit of diss at you. We received a game. It's a good game.
It is a good game.
It's called Neurovoider. Tyler, you can just... Tyler. And we will be... I feel like I'm ready to put a score on this. If you're ready to put a score on it.
Absolutely. I didn't even...
Hold it till the end.
Get that far.
But Neurovoider... All right. Neurovoider is a procedurally generated game.
Yes.
Tyler, you want to explain what that is? Kevin, you want to explain that?
Yes, so procedurally generated, we've spoken about before.
I was not expecting that.
That's okay. We've spoken about this before. Basically, it has a lot of what are called RNG, random number generation, where the game is different every time you play it because you are a character that is entering an area that is randomly generated.
Infinite possibilities.
So it has...
Sort of.
It's similar, but different every time.
Yeah, so they'll be like, here's a lab level, or here's a cemetery level, or here's
a
this.
I've played a lab level before, but I've never seen
but
this.
But the layout is always different. Mm-hmm. So, Tyler, what do you play as a Neurovoider?
I play as the Tyler class. That's all of them. When it comes right down to it, I will pick the Fortress class.
Well,
that's the one that...
No, as a base.
A brain?
Yeah. So you start the game by jumping out.
Oh,
into
I'm a brain.
You're a brain.
You're a
you
brain.
You asked the wrong question.
You start out as a brain.
That's not the Tyler class.
Okay, and then you pick one of three classes as you go into the combat.
To clarify, the classes are robots.
Yeah, the classes are robots, and then you can
the
upgrade.
The brain goes into a bot.
You can upgrade the different parts of the robot, but there's three different kinds, and they're kind of the holy trinity of gaming, if you will. They represent the three most basic kind of classes. Tyler, what are they?
You have Dash, which is small, low HP, fast, and can dash.
Yeah, glass cannon.
Yes.
Yep.
You have Rampage, which does just that. Little mid-range HP, good bit of damage, kind of low cooldown.
It's essentially your damage class.
Yeah. And then there's the Fortress class, which moves a little bit slower, has a lot of HP, has a shield that you can project on yourself.
Yeah.
Has the big heavy hitting weapons right out the gate. And
it's a tank.
You're driving a tank with your brain.
So as you go through this game, there's like 20 different levels you go through, but each time you pick what you want to play. You can play a smaller... They give you three options, and they tell you either how big the map is, how many enemies are the difficulty, and how much loot there will be.
And how many rare guys there are.
Yeah, exactly. And then you pick one of those, and you go through, you find all the little nodes they have to explode, and you move on, collecting loot, selling it, and upgrading it. The one thing that I didn't like about this is when you first select your class, you get to select a power-up or a skill to use.
27 of them.
And they all are unlocked from the beginning.
Right.
I would have enjoyed some sort of progression with that.
I agree. That would have been a good choice.
The inventory as well, when you get all the...
Oof, that gets rough.
Yeah. When you're done with a level, especially a long level that has a lot of loot, you oftentimes have a whole lot of stuff to equip, potentially. Not all of it is your class. So you can
switch classes mid-game.
Yeah. But
between levels,
it's sometimes hard to really determine comparing things. What's more strong? What's actually a less strong? Especially once you get into upgrading them, you can take like a simple gun and upgrade it so it looks on a base level better than a rare weapon. But picking up that rare weapon and upgrading it will make it better. But
right.
Statistically, it's hard to see that in comparison. The inventory
you gotta
section.
Remember that.
Inventory section is it could be done better.
I agree.
The gameplay itself. It's a twin stick shooter. It's kind of like a Binding of Isaac. If you ever played that, it's like a top down.
Nuclear throne. Enter the Gungeon.
It's very much like Enter the Gungeon.
It's kind of a bullet hell.
Yeah.
It's kind of a roguelike.
Yeah.
It's an interesting. I mean, really, twin stick shooter is the best description for it, but if you don't know what twin stick shooter is, that doesn't help.
You move a guy with your left stick, and then you aim your weapon and shoot with the right
stick.
Correct. And you run around until you shoot all the guys.
Sometimes you smash X, A, B.
You have two guns, though. You have L and R, and you have to shoot your left gun or your right gun, depending
on which
way
you're aiming. So you aim with R, and then you shoot. It's actually a pretty deep game. I started off not liking it at all.
Oh.
And then I very, very much started to enjoy it. I played co-op. Did you guys get a chance to play co-op before we started?
Did not.
I will say that co-op is okay.
It seems like it'd be
is
very
it split
difficult.
Screen or is it one screen?
Split. No, wait. Oh, I can't even remember. It is split. Okay, it's split. It's four-way split because you have to up to four people.
Right.
But the thing is that some of the levels are big enough that you'll just get lost. And if you were to do a one screen, you have to pull out. And I think if you zoom out,
you have to stay together.
Well, yeah, true. You can do that. Actually, I'm trying to remember. It's one screen, and then if you lose your partner, you can press X to teleport to them. I'm pretty sure. No, it's not. It's split screen. I don't know why I'm thinking. Because there is the option of, like, you'll lose your... If you die, you can still follow your partner, but you... it's... Look, co-op is a little bit hectic. Regardless of how you see it on your screen, it's a little bit hectic, And sometimes it can be unfair because there's no splitting of the loot. It's very much kind of whoever grabs it first. And that comes down to sometimes you cannot see what the class is of the loot before you pick it up.
You can never see what the class is of the loot before you pick it up.
So if your buddy is playing as a tank and you're playing as a damage, and then he happens to grab all the loot and you grab some of it, but it's not your class, it's weird. There's small things that can be done to make it a little bit easier to figure things out.
A combined loot?
Yeah, or combined loot pool and stuff like that. But as a game, Kevin, you haven't gotten a lot of time to talk about it. What did you think? Because you played these kind of games before.
I enjoyed it. I had a good time with it. I could see how it could be fun in multiplayer given time. I don't think it's as tight as other games like Binding of Isaac.
No, but it's also...
Go ahead.
Done by, like, a couple people.
No. I'm not saying that's a negative... I'm not saying that's a negative mark against it. Obviously, Isaac is a very... Like, it's very long in the tooth. Isaac has had the benefit of age at this point.
True.
That being said, you know... There are good things and bad things about it. Luckily, the bad things are not necessarily like bread and butter gameplay elements. A lot of it is UI, and a lot of it is things that could easily be fixed over time. Given, you know,
my biggest problem with it is that it doesn't have a progression system. It doesn't have an overarching progression system.
Killing me though.
I like the fact that Isaac, I finish a run or I quote unquote beat the game, and I feel like I've done something. I've unlocked an ending. I've unlocked new sets of items.
The beauty
of Isaac is like it's 6 levels.
Yeah.
And then it's 8 levels.
And then it's like 12 levels, and then the levels start being sub levels, and
there are ins and outs of those sub levels. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
Builds on itself.
Neurovoider kind of feels like the same kind of thing, but a little bit more refined in the gunplay.
You know, you make me feel so bad about everything I think about games the second you start talking about them.
Hey, man, you just got to start looking at it more analytically.
Yeah, no, I play games and I'm like, oh, this is fun. Play game.
But you got to think about the analytics of it.
You got to think more analytically about it.
So this game makes Tyler feel very good in his heart.
Mm-hmm.
He very much enjoys it.
And my thumbs.
In his butt.
I will give it an 8 out of 10, Tyler.
That's
9.
Okay.
I also was going to give it an 8.
Okay. So it looks like the middle is like 8.5. And I think that's a perfect accumulation. So Neurovoider gets an 8.5 from us. I think it's only what, $15? It's a buy for me.
Regardless. Yeah, oh yeah.
It's absolutely a buy.
For $15, it's worth it.
Yeah. Definitely pick it up. I'm gonna we're really, really close here to the end. We're an hour 10 in. I want to talk really briefly about something called Thimbleweed Park. We'll have that next time, a full thing for you. If you are slightly older and played games that are on like the PC, if you played the like not DOS days, but a little bit after that, LucasArts adventure games like Maniac Mansion, Monkey Island, the creator of Maniac Mansion and Monkey Island, Ron Gilbert, him and a few other people have teamed up and they have created a game called Thimbleweed Park. You might have heard about this after its $650,000 successful Kickstarter campaign. It launches March 30th for $20. They were so nice to give us a copy of the game. And I am super into point and clicks. I have played a little bit of it thus far. And since this comes out after embargo, I can tell you that this is the shit. If you're like me and you've been waiting for the quote-unquote return of the point-and-click genre or the quote-unquote golden age of adventure games, this is it's the closest thing you'll get to it. It's fantastic. I'm not going to speak on a score yet because I've only played so long, but as a game base, the writing is fantastic. The puzzles aren't too obtuse.
Three woods back, baby.
Yeah, it's our time now. We'll talk about it next time along with Inner World, which is another point-and-click game that we got. I didn't get around to playing that, but I would say if you are into point-and-clicks, definitely give Thimbleweed Park a look. It's really, really good. Tyler, do you mind talking about this next game for a minute or two as we wrap it up, or do you want to
save it? Yeah, no, I'll take it.
And then we'll kind of wrap it in because Kevin's also had some hands-on time now with something specifically.
So if you've ever played Blaster Master... for NES, this starts out that exact same way where you're in the tank and you're like, can I still get out of the tank? Yep, you can still get out of the tank.
Question. I've heard that a lot of the beginning is similar. Is this a remake? A reboot?
I don't know. I didn't get that far in Blaster Master because it's too hard.
Well, Blaster Master is a very difficult game.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've heard that like the first world is very similar to the first world in the NES.
So I believe that because I was getting flashbacks.
Yeah.
It looks exactly the same. It's got them pixel graphics.
Okay. So Blaster Master Zero, what's different?
What's different? I don't really know.
So what's the same?
What's the same? Well, Sophia still has that Mega Man jump arc.
Ah.
That good mid-air turn feel.
That good feel.
And, I mean, there are all sorts of power-ups. This game is a Metroidvania. This game is a $10 bad story, pretty decent Metroidvania with some really cool stuff going on in it.
If you play Blaster Master on the original Nintendo, this is pretty... I mean, it's pretty much the same thing, right?
Yeah, except there's... Instead of lives... And game overs, you just have save points and you just go back to them.
Okay, at that point, I would hope they would have done something like that. I mean, you can be super retro and go like game overs and lives.
Yeah, that would be horrible.
But for a Switch, and especially the audience that's dealing with the Switch, I think saves work. Have you been playing this on TV mostly, handheld mode?
Back and forth, just to make sure.
Does it have pro controller support?
I heard it doesn't. I need one.
Okay.
I heard it does not have pro controller
support. I think it's supposed to be getting an update with pro controller support.
Sure, won't do it.
But yeah, I've heard it's decent in comparison to the original because you are a big fan of the original. Do you think this lives up to it, or do you think it could have spent a little bit more time in the hopper?
I don't know the story of the original.
I mean,
but
it's an NES game. You're a guy and you do the thing. It's like, go get my frog and let's go.
Yeah.
That's literally what the story is.
In the first one?
It's the same shit. Yeah.
Oh, well, it's exactly the same. It does a little better job, I would say, because Metroidvania.
Yeah. So you think it's a good continuation? Because Blaster Master wasn't just like the one NES one and done. They've released other ones over the course of time.
Mm-hmm.
But you think it's a decent entry.
I mean, it's not bad. I'm looking forward to Blaster Master 1.
When it comes out. You mean Blaster Master 360. we'll have a final score for you guys when...
I can score it because I finished it.
Oh, yeah, you did. That's right. Okay, so score it for us.
I would say because of the lack of story, the very kiddie story, I'm hovering between 6, 5, and 7.
Okay. I feel like 7 is a decent...
It was comfy.
Yeah, it's a comfy one.
It was a comfy 6-hour game for $10. Not bad.
Hey...
I'm pleased with it.
Real quick, before we go on here, I just want to wish everyone a happy Dark Souls, because
that's right.
The Ring City came out.
Ring City, so, bitch. Ring City, bitch.
Yeah, 10-10-20s on the. Never mind. so enjoy nice. That. If any of you guys play it, let's talk about it. It looks pretty sweet. It's like the final chapter of Dark Souls 3.
I didn't beat Dark Souls 3.
Okay.
I didn't beat Dark Souls.
Well, Dark Souls any is a much them. Harder game. Dark Souls 3. It might be a good reason to jump back into Dark Souls. I'll see my little brother play it.
I think I made it the farthest in Demon's Souls. You know, that old, old one.
I have a good friend who sometimes has a bad temper when it comes to games.
Yeah.
So as a joke, one year I bought him Dark Souls.
Oh, God.
Just to see what would happen. See if he would end up, you know, like...
With a broken controller.
Right. He just completely just destroyed that game and then went on to beat 2 and 3 soundly.
I mean, they're good games.
It's awesome.
It's all about skill. Those games are all about skill. Do you know when does that DLC drop again?
Today.
Oh, it drops today. Today is the 28th of March. You won't be hearing this until...
I was trying not to date it, but yeah, that's fine.
You won't hear this till after April Fool's Day because of embargoes, which is... this is our April Fool's Day episode.
Saturday.
This is our April Fool's Day episode.
We didn't do anything for our St. Paddy's Day episode. We brought it up. We mentioned that it was, so we'll continue the tradition.
It's April Fool's Day.
The joke was that I didn't edit any of the show. Kevin, you finally got your hands around...
I touched a Switch.
Yeah, around a little Joy-Con now. You fucking grabbed that Joy-Con.
Here, dude. It's just... I've never felt...
Yeah, here, put it in your hand. We got one on set. I've
never felt more like a gorilla riding a tricycle.
Yeah, so let me... Just tell the audience.
This was designed for tiny, tiny little hands.
This is designed in a lab for people who had hands designed in a lab.
Here's my problem. I have not played it in, like, full mode with both Joy-Cons on either side of the screen.
It feels worse.
So that's the thing. This analog stick...
On the right Joy-Con.
On the right Joy-Con is way too close to the buttons.
Yep.
But I feel like it wouldn't be much more comfortable when you're playing in full mode if it were lower.
The problem I have with the Joy-Cons on the left and right when you're playing with them attached to the screen is that it's hard to balance the screen at the same time and get a comfortable grab on it, because you feel like your hands are just kind of like you're high-fiving the back of the fucking Switch.
Yeah.
On the dock thing, the plastic dock they give you, I find that okay. I like that. The little thing that you slide them into.
This bad boy.
Oh, and within the first 5 seconds of holding this, I put the little L and R button thing on wrong.
Oh!
So that seems like a little bit of an oversight.
Yeah, if you put the safety strap on the wrong direction, it is going to take a monstrous... It's like opening a rough jar of pickles times four.
I mean, I didn't really have a problem with it. I was just...
You really have to rough it up, though.
That's just what I do with my hands.
No, that's what I'm saying. If you put this little thing on in the wrong way, to get it off, you have to force it, and it feels like you're breaking it, which is bad.
Well, that's the thing is, like, why would you even allow that functionality?
More questions to ask Nintendo. They have big things announced for E3, you hear.
Like I said, they're going to announce the real Nintendo Switch.
So, now that you finally got your hands on it, we've all finally gotten our hands and played on the Nintendo Switch. What do we think, guys? Do we think as a system?
It's big. It's square. It's not big enough. It's not square enough.
I think it's innovative, but I'm not as hype now that I see it as I was before I did.
I'm going to continue saying what I've always said. This is a software console, and it's going to take a lot of developers knowing how to properly use the Joy-Cons and also take advantage of the fact that this system... Look, back in the day... There used to be fucking things that you'd buy for like $200 that would let you, quote unquote, play your Xbox in the car, you know, on the go.
Oh, yeah.
That's just now a thing you have with the Switch.
Yeah,
you can play it on the go, and like, people need to take advantage of that.
I was sitting in a particular room of my house earlier with my Wii U pad.
Yeah.
A room in which you don't normally have access to video games. Let's just put it that way.
The pooper.
And I was playing my Wii U, and I was like, dude, 10-year-old Kevin would just be so ecstatic about this.
Yeah.
And I don't even think twice about the fact that I can literally carry my game around with me.
Hey, want to hear something fun?
Yeah.
Hey, got yourself one of them Ziploc bags at home? One of them food savers?
Oh, boy.
Oh, God.
No. Start up your Zelda, right?
Uh-huh.
And put it in one of those food saver bags.
And then play in the bathtub?
Vacuum seal it. You just throw it in the fucking water without caring.
That is a Leiden move, if I've ever heard one. Our friend Leiden would totally do that.
Well, I mean, I know people who've put their, like, phone Ziploc bags and, like,
held also known people that ate quesadillas off their chests.
I know somebody who put their phone in a bag and taped the bag to the wall in the shower so they could watch TV while they're showering.
I mean, I bring my TV in there.
All I'm saying is, like, Sega Genesis.
I have a Bluetooth light bulb.
I'm sorry.
I have a Bluetooth toaster.
The Sega handheld. I can't remember what it was called.
The Game Gear.
Thank you.
Did you say what the fuck is the Nomad?
Yeah.
The Nomad, my dude, was a big-ass honking thing that required a AC charge. Oh, my God. My listeners right now are freaking out.
I'm bringing the room down for a second. I just want to finish my thought before you go off on this.
Nah, I'm just going to go off on you.
The Sega Game Gear was, like, revolutionary to me. Being able to play Sonic on that bitch was awesome. Now I have a Wii U, and now there's the Nintendo Switch. And I think Nintendo's onto something. They just need to figure it the fuck out.
Are you sure you're talking about the Game Gear, not the Nomad? The Nomad was the one you could plug in the cartridges.
I don't know. I just know it had a backlit screen. You could just carry it the hell around with you and play Sonic.
There was two things. There was the Sega Game Gear.
I didn't own it.
There was the Sega Game Gear that had like carts that you would put in.
And color.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's the Sega Nomad. Oh, you don't know what the Sega Nomad is?
No.
The Sega Nomad is a... I'll bring it over sometime. I still have it.
Good.
It's got a cracked screen, but it is a big honking thing about, like... You can't see it, but imagine a Wii U system, essentially.
Sure.
Much smaller screen. There's a port for two controllers. You plug it into an AC for charging, but you use Sega Genesis cartridges. It's a portable Sega Genesis.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, you remember this? My dad got it for me because I think he had a business trip.
I didn't own anything up until the PS1. These were all my neighbor's games. I just remember that frickin' Sega handheld being lit.
I mean, the Sega Game Gear was good.
Dude, all I wanted to do was carry that thing around with me and play it. Now I can.
I mean, the Nomad did that. You could play Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
That's so cool.
In your hand.
That was
for like
then.
45 minutes. Before
right.
Okay, then you're thinking of the Nomad. Yeah. I'll have to show you the Nomad sometime.
He also had a Virtual Boy, which was like...
That was
pretty sweet.
All right, guys. I think
that's
we have...
That's where we got our tagline.
We have We have talked. We have joked. Not a lot of joking this time, but there was a lot of games we have to play.
I mean, I laughed a lot.
You laughed quite a bit. Were some good times.
Because he told a lot of jokes.
He told a lot of jokes.
I'm the funniest.
I'll laugh when I'm listening to it again because you
won't
sleeper. No, you don't. You
just don't exhale laugh through when your I'm nose.
Alone. Guys, it's been wonderful. Kevin.
Yeah.
Do you have a fact prepared?
I do.
All right. All right. While he gets that up.
It's up.
Guys, if you want to hit us up, you can find us on a plethora of places. One of which being Twitter. Twitter, we are now posting when I do reviews of films, sometimes specific games. You can find links to my articles there. Tyler has been posting when there is sales and stuff specifically.
Well,
you wanted me to get Persona
that
4
one
goals.
Time.
But I'm saying that there's things on the Twitter. It's not just me going like,
yes.
There's links to original content and stuff written by us, and you can get up to date information.
I'll write
something. All about stuff.
I won't write something.
It's at SuperGameCast64, but if you want to talk to us personally, I'm at SGC64Matt.
I'm at GingerBeard_man, beer like the beverage.
I'm at T. Tremaglio.
If you want to find us on Facebook, that's facebook.com/SGC64, spelled out. 64 is spelled out.
Phonetically.
SGC, and 64 phonetically. Audibletrial.com/SGC64 for your free audiobook. And if you want to email us with questions, comments, or concerns, SGC64mail@gmail.com. And as always, leave us a review on iTunes so the review robot 2K12-3000 can read it out on the show. Kevin, what is our factual game?
You know everybody's favorite plumber, Mario?
Yeah. What about him?
1981, his debut
it was a good year.
In Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
Mario, according to Miyamoto, was about 24 or 25 years old in that game.
Oh, God.
Which would make him currently 59.
Okay, here's a question.
So Mario's 59.
Do you think that at a brisk 60, coming up on that 60 years, do you think that he can really explore an Odyssey? Do you think that a 60-year-old man can have an Odyssey?
Absolutely.
Sure. I mean, I don't think...
How old is Homer?
I really don't think Papa's going to be jumping on hats.
That's what I'm saying. We see this guy doing, like, triple back flips, and at some point, he has to regress.
He's spry.
At Super Mario Galaxy 4, is he going to have a wheelchair power-up?
So here's the other important question.
What?
When was the last time he plumbed anything?
Wait a minute.
Fucking Princess Peach at the end of the galaxy.
Late pipe.
Cleaned up that pipe. This is also a show that's more for adults than it's for kids.
Hey, in 5 years, do you think we'll get another Mario 64?
With Baby Mario?
No, it'll be Mario.
Because he's 64 in 5 years.
Damn it! That's something I would have laughed at very hard.
It'll be Mario AARP.
That's like the fourth time you made an AARP joke.
Mario AARPG. Turn it off. It's done. We're done. We beat SGC64. Goodbye. I'm done.
Thanks, Audible. We'll see you guys next time.
God damn it, Tyler.
Super Mario RPG joke.
That was too good.